Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. Hey, we're back to doing our five-day-a-week show, which means we are returning to the mailbag, which means we are returning to the normalcy that comes with having basketball and sports back in our lives. And while, you know, Pete and I talked a lot last week, especially after that first game, about, you know, celebrating the minor victories along the way, and one of them has been having sports back, I've thoroughly enjoyed watching the Dodgers, having the Lakers and the Dodgers, and then, you know, the Sparks were playing the other day, and MLS is underway already. We're in for a pretty unique situation here that I hope is never replicated, because I never want to go through anything that our entire country has been going through or our entire world has been going through. But I do want to, before we dive into the mailbag, I do want to say, and we said it at the end of last week, and I want to keep on repeating this because the show has seen a lot of growth over the last week or so. The entire network has seen a lot of growth, and I just want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for sticking with us. And then, you know, to those of you who are making your way back, welcome back. I'm looking forward to, you know, hopefully being a part of your daily routine all over again, and that starts with shows like this. So we have a handful of questions here, and I'm going to answer all of them, starting with this one. So it comes from JT the Boss 22, writing, "Hey Anthony and or Pete, my name is John, and I was wondering, what is your take on the Caruso, Green, Dwight, and AD lineup?" LeBron is also in that lineup. And, you know, thank you for the sponsors. Apparently, Rock Auto and Built Bar have been great for John. My thoughts on that lineup, I think in theory, it should be one of the Lakers' best lineups that feature AD at the five. You have Caruso in there, who is, I think, the best point guard on the team in general, but especially alongside LeBron. You have Green there to offer some spacing and make up for the lack of spacing that comes with playing AD at the four, right? Because he doesn't really space the floor. There's also some vertical spacing by way of Dwight. And defensively, I think this is probably going to be the Lakers' best lineup. And, you know, I'm really interested to see. So Kuzma's going to have to be involved if the Lakers are really going to reach their ceiling. So if you swap out Dwight for Kuzma, I think, and Kuzma is playing well, that's the best version of the Lakers. You know, you can maybe swap out KCP for Caruso or whatever, but in general, I think the Caruso, Green, Kuzma, LeBron, AD lineup is probably going to be their best lineup, or that's going to be the lineup that has the Lakers playing their best if everybody is hitting on all cylinders. But, you know, depending on the situation, I could also see the Lakers basically going with the "I'm going to punch you in the mouth" repeatedly kind of approach to basketball, which we really saw both in the Dallas scrimmage and then the Orlando scrimmage. And if that is the way that they're going, then I think this is going to be the best approach to doing that. So having Dwight in there at the five, he's the most physically imposing center that the Lakers have. And then you have, you know, AD out there, and he's capable of being, you know, the pterodactyl that he is. And LeBron is out there, and he's one of the most, especially if he's playing at the three, he's probably the most physically imposing three in the entire league. And then you have Danny Green providing spacing. Caruso is Caruso. I think this is going to be the kind of lineup that I think the Lakers might use against, say, Houston. I guess they were playing Jeff Green at the five in stretches tonight or last night by the time you guys are listening to this. And if that's the way that they want to approach things, then I think the Lakers could opt for a lineup like this and just throw lobs over the top of them and really punish them, or build a wall around the rim that makes it difficult for guys like Westbrook to get all the way there unimpeded. So ideally, the Lakers would have, you know, if they're trying to match up, you know, if they're trying to go small and still take advantage of Houston, then you go with AD at the five. But if you want to go big and take Houston completely out of their game if it's at all possible, this is kind of the lineup that you would that you would probably roll with. And just in general, this is probably the Lakers' best, you know, quote unquote traditional lineup. And I say traditional only because, you know, the positions here are pretty clearly defined. That's not really how basketball is played in the NBA nowadays, but you know, the Lakers have been successful by being kind of a throwback team. And if that's how they want to go about things, then this is the best way to do it. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, next question here comes from DesLaker801. Hey, Anthony, what are the chances of a star player testing positive and trying to or keeping it on the low, assuming it's before a big game? Also, what do you think about the Ringer and Bill Simmons as a whole? Would you say they are biased? Yes, I would. Well, I'll touch on the Simmons stuff here in a bit. I want to start with the star player COVID thing. The real answer, the straight up answer to this is that at the end of the day, the league is going to act in the best interest of the superstar who tests positive for COVID, and in the best interest of the safety of everybody around that superstar. The thing to keep in mind here is that one would hope that as the stakes get more real, the superstars get smarter and smarter and more conservative and more conservative with their general well-being, their exposure to potential COVID cases, the league in and of itself, like not just superstars, but teams, right? So right now, so Lou Williams is the example that comes to mind, right? Because he's the idiot who went out of the bubble and went to a strip club. Say whatever you will about, like, oh, I swear, guys, I just went and got wings and came right back home, as if, like, Postmates doesn't exist, as if that's not an option, right? Like, if I would have given that excuse to Jen, hey, Fred, why is there a charge at the strip club right now? I really like their wings. I went there, I got the food, and I came right back home, I swear. I don't think that excuse or that explanation would have sat very well with Jen. But anyway, I digress. I'm not calling him a liar. Just, you know, there are worlds in which this exists that he didn't go there, get his food, and leave. Like, for example, I don't normally, when I'm going to pick up food, even with friends, take a selfie of myself picking up that food. Usually you take a selfie to commemorate a good time. And he took that selfie. Yes, they were wearing masks or whatever, but the guy who took that selfie with was holding a drink. Maybe they were having a drink while they were waiting for their food, whatever. I'm just saying, I find it a little difficult to believe. Anyway, different topic altogether. In this case, the question is asking a hypothetical about, like, how the league would handle a superstar coming down with COVID or testing positive for COVID ahead of I would imagine this involves like a big series. So if it was to happen right now, I think the league would very clearly tell that player to quarantine for a while, go take care of yourself, and we'll see you back here as the stakes are you know, increase. I think that will remain the case. You have to believe that will remain the case moving forward, right? That at the end of the day, even while, like, if LeBron tests positive for COVID, even while that would be a serious hit to that series in the moment, the league would know that it would be incredibly short-sighted to do anything other than act in the best interests of LeBron and act in the best interests of everybody that LeBron would come in contact with. So LeBron would have to, in that case, quarantine for the 10 to 14 days until he's completely asymptomatic and then come back to then return to the team. And in which situation, that might be too long, and the Lakers might have already lost the series that they were playing in that LeBron might have missed. That's what we have to believe. Like, we have no choice but to think that that's how the league will handle that situation. All that said, I really don't think we'll see that situation come up because, like, as it is, most superstars, especially right now, see the finish line. They see the championship trophy. So as they see that championship trophy, they already are probably taking extra precautions to make sure that they don't come down with it, because if they come down with it, that puts their legacies at risk, right? Like, you don't want to be the superstar who comes down with COVID while the NBA does everything it possibly can to keep you safe in this bubble. Like, you don't want to be that can potentially tarnish a legacy, right? Now, there are mitigating circumstances. Like, if you're Lou Williams' teammate and he comes back from one of his trips out of the bubble after going to a strip club for quote unquote wings, and then comes back and gets you sick because of his own stupidity, like, that's just something that you have to address as part of the conversation there. But for the most part, most superstars right now are taking extra precautions to make sure that they don't get sick, because we are only a couple quick sprints away from, you know, legitimately competing for a championship. And I think as we get further into the season, that's only going to get heightened. That those precautions are only going to escalate, because as we get closer to the championship, as the stakes get higher, as tensions and as the general situation gets more and more important, I think not only will superstars take it more seriously, but the organizations that they play with will take it more seriously, and their teammates will take it more seriously. Like, I'm sure, I would hope, quite frankly, that more than a couple of Lou Williams' teammates will look at him and say, like, hey, dude, what the fuck? What are you doing? Even if it's just to go to pick up food, Postmates exists. We know that you were with family. Send family to go pick up that food and then eat it back at the house. You know, be smarter than that. And even, like, we've already talked about some of the ethics behind playing in the midst of this pandemic and using all of the tests that the NBA is using that the general populace doesn't have access to. That means that there are tests are being wasted on Lou Williams to make sure that he stays safe while going to a strip club to come back and still be able to play basketball. That's an insult, quite frankly, to everybody else who is dealing with this pandemic, as the vast majority of us have had to deal with this pandemic. You know, but anyway, again, I think the way to answer this question is that at the end of the day, the NBA has to act in the best interests of those players, not only the player who potentially comes down with COVID in this hypothetical, but all of the players and all of the people that come in contact with that player or that superstar. And, you know, I'm sure conspiracy theories will fly if that player returns to the court sooner than they normally would, whatever. At the end of the day, like, becoming completely cynical, you have to believe that the NBA is going to act in the best interest of the players that they are putting at immense risk to play in this bubble in the first place. Now, to answer the question about the Ringer, look, all content nowadays, and unfortunately this extends to actual news and politics and all that stuff, all content nowadays is being profited off of, right? And if you're going to make your content profitable, you have to understand the audience that you're targeting with that content. And in the Ringer's case, Bill Simmons has a huge audience in Boston, right? And he himself is a huge Boston sports fan. So it's impossible to ignore the biases, especially with Simmons, like, giving, you know, any kind of clearance to any content that goes up on the site. It's impossible to ignore those biases. Now, it doesn't mean that all of the writers that work for him are biased. There are some very good content creators, obviously, that work for The Ringer. But they also have an audience that they target to make money. And if it serves a bunch, a largely Bostonian audience to generate content that maybe tweaks the Lakers whenever possible or tweaks any of Boston's rivals whenever possible, then that's kind of what they're going to do, right? Just like this show. Now, I do try to keep things as unbiased as possible, but at the end of the day, I'm a Laker fan. I was born and raised a Laker fan. So I think it's the best way to handle this stuff. I'm not a journalist, is to admit my own biases and then try to combat them as often as possible so that my analysis is as untinged by that as it can possibly be. And, you know, sometimes I'm better at that than others, but for the most part, there are moments where my homerism, you know, comes forth. And, the thing that really annoys me sometimes with especially, you know, journalists is they claim, no, there are no biases involved here. No biases whatsoever. You know, you talk to any journalist, I'm not going to single anybody out, but of course there are biases involved. If you're a Lakers beat writer and you have more access on a typical basis to the Lakers, your analysis is going to be swayed heavily by that experience. Thinking that it isn't is ridiculous. That's not how the brain works. And so, with the Ringer, now I think there are legitimate questions about, you know, their hiring practices. Yeah, a website that covers the NFL and the NBA as closely as it does should probably be more diverse than it is, and it came under some criticism for that. But you could say that about just about any publication or any platform in this industry, unfortunately. I hope that's something that improves moving forward. All right, let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we are going to answer the last couple questions that you guys have. All right, next question here comes from Boomy, the Mad Genius. Hi, Anthony and Pete. Questions for the mailbag. One, when did you guys play basketball? When you guys did play basketball, which NBA player, past or present, did your game most resemble? Two, why is your favorite animal hybrid, or what is your favorite animal hybrid, turtle, duck, platypus, bear, etc. from Avatar? If you could add your own animal hybrid to the show, what would it be? So the first question, I'll actually bring this up with Pete next time he and I talk. But the first question here, when I played, I'm not going to go so far as to say it resembled any NBA player because I don't think that's really possible. I wasn't that good. But, you know, I do know in terms of the player that I spent the most time kind of studying and trying to mimic was Kobe. You know, I remember I would watch YouTube. So here's an example. When I was watching YouTube one day, or when I was watching Kobe highlights, and this was back when I was taking basketball super seriously, and I actually thought I had a future in basketball, as stupid as that was of me to think, I remember watching Kobe and what he did on some of his fadeaways when he had a live dribble was basically take a dribble, which allowed him to take a full step for, I was left-handed, so for me it would have been with my right foot away from the basket, turn, and fade away to give myself some extra space. For Kobe, it was taking the dribble with his right hand, stepping with his left foot, and then bringing that right foot around, turning and shooting, right, to generate just a little extra space. And I remember when I first saw that, I was just absolutely blown away. And I tried and I tried and I tried to master that move, but as it turns out, I was not Kobe. So I think it was just kind of, it was, you know, if I was presented the situation where I had a player in isolation, I think I used, you know, parts of Kobe's game. I also liked, you know, Dwayne Wade's game. and you know, kind of handled it that way. But for the most part, I tried to stay within myself and tried to play as smart as possible, which, you know, the smart way for me to play was not putting myself in isolation spots very often. If I was isolating a ton, it was usually me being isolated on the bench for trying to isolate too much. But I'm kind of interested to see what Pete says there, in terms of, you know, player that he tried to play the most like. I think another way to answer that too is to kind of say which player's approach to the game that I most like. And as odd as this might sound, because of how much I hated the San Antonio Spurs, I actually really liked how Manu Ginobili played, you know, just in general. And I was left-handed, so there were parts of his game that I enjoyed using, and I liked that he was such a great passer too. And I liked all the angles that he used his left hand and arm to whip passes around the court with. So you know, any combination. I was basically a shooting guard in a point guard's body. Well, I was a basketball player in a round person's body in general. But just you know, if I ever spent time studying the game, it was those three guys. In terms of favorite animal hybrid from the from Avatar, the platypus bear was pretty legit. Although in Legend of Korra, her like polar bear dog was awesome. So that's my actual answer. That's I know I'm kind of cheating because it wasn't Avatar, but her polar bear dog was pretty incredible. If I could combine any two animals, I mean, like if you could combine a shark and an orca, right? A shark orca. I would probably go in that route. I apologize to everybody for that terrible joke. Last one here. Hey Anthony, a longtime fan. This comes from Come On Skip. Longtime fan of the podcast. Thank you. Great work with what you produce on a daily basis. Thank you. I'm glad to have basketball back to produce that content. I have two questions for you. Do you think that the creators of Avatar should have continued with The Legend of Korra or stopped at the greatest cartoon ending of all time in the original series? And what if the Lakers were able to sign Kawhi last offseason? Do you believe LeBron would have the same numbers? And would the Lakers be around or higher than 49-14? So the first question there, Legend of Korra is interesting because there are aspects of that show that I think really hit some major heights. But when I left Avatar, if I was going to continue with more Avatar content, I wanted to stick around those main characters again. You know, I wanted to see how Aang handled peace. Like, this is the one thing that is kind of a bummer about shows that are centered around war, is that, like, war is obviously interesting and it's the most dynamic setting and it allows for the most drama in the moment. But, you know, to quote George Washington and Hamilton, right? Now I'm going to butcher the quote, but to paraphrase, you know, war is easy, leading is hard, basically, right? You know, and he goes on to say, is like, dying is easy, living is hard. And I think for Avatar, I would have been really interested to see how they diplomatically engineered peace or figured out to, you know, replanted peace throughout this world that at that point was completely war torn, you know. The devastation that the Fire King laid waste to that land with, like, they were literally just burning huge chunks of land before Aang finally took him down. And I would have loved to seen how that entire world was rebuilt, you know, with everybody kind of getting along, who went into which roles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how I would have preferred it. Legend of Korra was fun. I enjoyed it. And I really think there were parts of it that were legitimately great. Not Avatar great as consistently, but really, really good. I would have preferred to spend more time with the characters from Last Airbender. And then, so what if the Lakers were able to sign Kawhi last offseason? what would LeBron's numbers be? I think his numbers would be down because you would have somebody in Kawhi who, as we've seen in spots with the Clippers, is actually pretty good, maybe even underrated as a passer and as a facilitator. So that would bring, that would mean that LeBron wouldn't have to have the ball as much. I think the Lakers' defense would just be outrageous by having Kawhi and Anthony Davis on the court at the same time, especially given how Dwight has played this year, because they could have had Dwight still, right? He's on a league minimum contract, so or a veteran minimum contract. So if you could have any lineup out there where, you know, point guard X, Kawhi, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Dwight, I don't know how anybody scores on that. Especially if it's somebody like Caruso. Now, there would be some spacing concerns there or whatever, but defensively, I don't know how anybody scores on that lineup. I really don't. I have no idea. And in the playoffs, there is a lot of value in having a team that can just straight up lock teams down. And that's basically what. So to answer the actual question, would the Lakers be 49-14? Maybe. I think they'd probably be around the same kind of area, because a team like that, where you have Kawhi, who has won championships before, LeBron, who obviously has won championships and made trips to the finals on multiple occasions, I think they would understand, hey, let's pace ourselves and figure things out so that we know what it looks like when we're hitting on all cylinders, and then be able to, you know, basically coast through the season. And when we absolutely have to, you know, flip that switch and hit that next gear, we can get there. So I think they would probably be, you know, maybe if they're 49-14 right now, maybe they're around 49-14, or maybe even, you know, maybe an extra win here or there, or maybe even extra loss here or there. But I think they would still be around the same area, because neither Kawhi nor LeBron would have, I think, looked at the season and said, we have to win as many games as possible. I think both players are capable and comfortable winning in any building, in any situation, whether it's in the playoffs or in the regular season. And they would have just approached this season with, let's get through it healthy. And let's iron out the wrinkles and learning how to play together, and then hit the playoffs and really turn things into high gear. And they would have been champions for probably the next two or three seasons. So long as Kawhi, AD, and LeBron are on the same team, that team wins a championship. You can't have that kind of talent on the wing and not win. I think that's just not how that plays out. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you a ton for all the questions. Great questions so far. The Lakers will be back in action tomorrow afternoon, so Pete and I will watch that game and then record and have that show ready for you guys tomorrow night. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.